and her two daughters in a home invasion.
The judge ruling the list will be released Thursday unless lawyers for Joshua Komorzewski successfully appeal. The defense had argued the witnesses fear harassment and threats if their names are made public, jeopardizing Komorzewski's right to a fair trial. Authorities say he and Stephen Hayes killed Jennifer Hawk Pettit and her daughters in their home in Cheshire, Connecticut in 2007. Hayes was sentenced last year to death. Komorzewski's trial starts in September. Lisa Lacera, Fox News Radio.
Utah, the next energy hotspot. A Canadian company wants to start mining some 62 acres in Utah to produce bitumen, which is a tar-like form of petroleum. Canada's been doing that for years, making it the top supplier of foreign petroleum to the U.S. However, the operation's been blamed for increasing greenhouse gases and producing toxic waste. The proposed mine in Utah would be America's first. Environmentalists are opposing it. Karen Riegel, Fox News Radio.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.
Hello, this is William Whitecrow, and welcome to Sovereign Minds Radio once again, and boy, do we got a good show for you. Tonight we have Mark McCandlish with us. We're going to talk about UFOs, extraterrestrials, abductions, things like that. Too bad we only got an hour. And just to let you all know out there that this I've got tonight's show and one more show, and then me, William Whitecrow, will be leaving the show, possibly coming back as a stand-in host when needed and things like that. But I've got a lot of other projects, movie writing projects, things like that, going CDs, other things. And Nate's going to be taking over.
And I would like to thank you.
No problem.
Because you helped me out, you know, get me going, helped me get the show off the ground. And, you know, now it's time. Obviously we have.
Oh, you're doing good.
You'd like to do the UFOs. I'd like to do the federal government. Let's do this.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's a good thing. And I probably will be coming back in this area again here shortly. Doing more of a show similar to Coast for you listeners out there. And with that said, I would like to touch base on only a few news, one news thread here. You know, the situation in Japan, we all need to look at this nuclear thing that's going on. You know, it's really contaminating the groundwater and things like that. And all of us out here in this country and everything really need to look at our nuclear situation a lot closer. I'm going to say it can be used for very positive things, but the new technologies and things we have now can make things better. So let's upgrade if we're going to build any more stations or something. So vote on that. Also, we want to talk about our sponsors here. Advanced Soil Stabilization using Technosoil for dust control on roads, driveways, and parking lots. Also, these people install in Crestone driveways. Call Todd Sykes for more information at 530-549-4801. And then Advanced Soil is green friendly for all the, I'm green friendly in everything I do pretty much. I live out in country. We produce all our own power, everything. So that's a must where we live, and it eliminates dust. So once again, Todd Sykes at 530-549-4801. And Nate?
And we have Team Quest, the MMA and fitness. Get a hold of Carlos. They have all kinds of deals from agent. You can go in there, 3, 4, 5 year olds can go in there, up to 80 year olds. So it's abusive. So maybe not 80, but you know,
I'll come back and tell you when I'm 80.
But go ahead and give him a call, 646-7346, and he'll get you with the right program for you.
You got it.
Actually, we had one of the Gracies come in on Saturday too, and he did just came in and taught a class.
Oh, really?
Yeah, one of the other Gracies, not the main Gracies, but still. I mean, we have Matt Lindley come sometimes, Dan Henderson. We have a bunch of people coming there, so.
You got it. Sounds good there. So there you go. Team Quest. Now, you want confidence and stuff, this is one way to do it. A lot of people go into the military, things like that. I say go into something like Team Quest and do the same thing.
Carlos is actually in the Marines still.
There you go.
He's an officer in the Marines. He just got back from South Korea teaching our Marines some police stuff over there. So,
oh, fantastic.
Yep, he's
fantastic.
Great man, great patriot, still serving the country.
There you go. And with that said, we're going to get on with the main chunk of the show here. We got Mark McCandlish with us, and Mark, you know, you've been on the show a couple times here and everything. What is your favorite thing about this field that we study? And we've studied it pretty much in depth. We talk quantum mechanics and theory and propulsion systems.
Right.
What really drags you in here?
I don't know, it's just the prospect that there's intelligent life elsewhere out there in the universe, you know, that they might be coming here. I just always have a feeling that sometime in the next 40, 50 years we may actually have some acknowledgement on the part of the government that this has been going on for a long time, probably even before recorded human history. But
I agree with you.
And I think it'd really be fascinating, you know, with all the different cultures we have here, but to imagine what it would be like to try and understand a culture from an entirely different star system, that's a pretty fascinating prospect to me.
Yeah, it would. It always has been with me, too. I grew up on the Indian Reservation, and we just seen so many things out in the desert and the mountains. It just... I got such a natural curiosity that when I seen something land in an area that could have been a meteor, it could have been anything, you know, a bird that glowed right or something, I had to go check it out, you know, and splunking, paranormal activity. But it's true, in the mountains and woods and deserts, since there's not that many people and aircraft, you will see a lot more of this type of activity.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that we need to find somebody else out there. We're not the only ones. I think we all know that.
Well, I don't think there's anything that would change our perspective more dramatically than knowing that there is other life out there, you know, maybe at the same technological level of advancement as we are, maybe, you know, hundreds or thousands of years ahead of us. Yeah. You might be able to share a few insights with us about what it takes to get along with the people around you or the other species around you, what it takes to really preserve the planet. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I try to shy away from the old, you know, the Galactic Federation and the Space Brothers are going to come down and save us.
But,
you know?
But we've seen them yesterday, right? No, I'm joking. Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, really,
I do too. I stay away from that.
Yeah, you know, I think it's naive to believe that that might be the case. One can always remain hopeful, but yeah. Still, I think you always have to sort of have your hand on the trigger and be ready for the worst case scenario, mm-hmm. but at the same time be very hopeful and
be
open to the idea that, you know, they're just as curious about us as we are about them.
Mm-hmm. And you know, one thing I've thought about this a long time, if I was an alien, would I go land on the lawn of the White House and say, hey, take me to your leader? I know humans. I wouldn't. I'd go to the regular people. I wouldn't go to our military or our governments. I'd try to get shot.
Sort of a grassroots kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly, and start from there and work my way up. But we've talked about a lot about propulsion systems and alien technology and stuff of that nature. Where are you at with that now? Anything new that you've heard?
Well, it's not so much new. I mean, I've actually got... there are a group of businessmen and scientists that have been on my case for years trying to get me to join their group. They're getting ready to make a public offering of stock to get investors and put together some of the technology. There are about 10 different teams of scientists that have some theoretical things that they would like to have funding for to experiment with, because they've apparently found enough evidence that, you know, there are lots of different ways to make a car roll down the road.
Oh, yeah.
Everything from steam to gas turbine engines.
Fin gas.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
Hydrogen. Mm-hmm. There's so many different ways to do it. Well, it's also true with things like, massless or fuelless, propellantless propulsion.
Sure, there.
You know, anti-gravity is sort of the generic term for these kinds of things. But there's probably a dozen different ways to do that too.
Mm-hmm.
And there are probably three ways that I'm personally aware of in terms of the technology that might be used to accomplish that. That I would really like to get together with some like-minded individuals and do some experiments and try to prove it out. Some of it, just tidbits, you know, I've heard from my contacts in the military, some from the investigations that I did on my own starting around 1988, 1989. Mm-hmm. And as I've told you before, one of the approaches that I had when I found out that the military really does have this technology, and they, I mean, Lockheed and Boeing are probably mm-hmm. the two principal contractors in terms of researching and developing this kind of stuff. It occurred to me that once I had heard that this stuff was real and that the things that I'd seen weren't just meteors, but mm-hmm. something that was artificial.
I mean, you have to have that go through your mind. Is this real or is this something, you know?
Well, I mean,
scientifically, you want to look at it.
Yeah, meteors don't change direction. And they don't slow down as they're falling. They speed
up. No, they
don't. You know?
Yeah.
And if you've seen that enough, and anybody who spent a lot of time outdoors at night in Redding will have more than their share of sightings, because there's obviously something going on in this area.
Yes, I
can't address specifically what it might be. I can guess, but my approach was that if there is this phenomenon, and then you have this whole other fringe area where people are claiming they've been abducted by aliens, it occurred to me that if there was any truth to that, that there was a likelihood, however small, that these people might have actually had a chance to see some propulsion system components, and I was right. I was absolutely right that that was the case. And so I had in hand, already had drawings that had been provided to me by people who'd seen things in military hangars like Edwards Air Force Base.
Right. Those are the ones you showed me before.
Lockheed Skunk Works and places like that. So I had a pretty good idea what the equipment looked like that was used to bring about these kind of capabilities. And so when I heard an interview that was being conducted on a station out of Las Vegas, and I don't remember offhand what the call sign for that station was, but they were interviewing these three young ladies that had claimed that they'd been abducted by aliens and this kind of stuff. Yeah. And so I just said, I contacted the people at the station. I told them that I spent a lot of time designing and illustrating weapon systems for the military. And as a technical illustrator, I just had a sort of curiosity about the kinds of things that they might have seen. And these are individuals who had never actually sat down with someone like me and tried to do a composite sketch of any of the stuff that they saw. And what really shocked me was that these people were actually identifying some of the very same components that I already knew
that's corroborating.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that's right. So that was probably the thing that I found most startling about the whole phenomenon, was that these are people that weren't just talking about gray aliens with big heads and large black eyes, but they were talking about seeing propulsion system components.
Technical facts.
Yeah. And the thing about, just the average civilian can look under the hood of a car and say, yeah, that's a V8 engine, and I don't know the first thing about how it works, but they can say, yeah, I know what it is because of what it looks like.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's the same thing if you go into a doctor's office to get an X-ray or an MRI. You may not know the first thing about the technology that makes that equipment work, but you can say, yeah, I know what that is.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what happened with these girls. They could identify specific components that they saw to these systems, and I could say, yeah, I know exactly what that is.
That must have been a good feeling right there.
Well, it was.
Be able to get that backed up.
Well, but the funny thing was, just recently there was an interview that was put up on YouTube, and it was part of the Disclosure Project and the series of interviews they'd done with people, industry insiders and so forth. And they actually had a guy who worked at Lockheed Skunk Works. I guess he's retired now, and the name eludes me, but the guy says that somewhere around the same time that I was doing what I was doing, they began to get the same feeling that I did, that maybe these people, however slim the chance might be, that they might have seen something that was technologically advanced, and they were doing these sort of impromptu interviews of abductees. And saying,
it makes sense.
Tell us what you saw. They were doing the same thing I was, but it was full-blown.
Higher up. They had a lot more cash behind them to
Fully funded by the United States government,
Interesting.
And so that was just yet another validation of what I had been doing, for years on my own. And, certain my friends and people that I am close to always kind of gave me that look, when I would tell them what I was finding. Because, the average person they won't believe this stuff. They just think that, you're dealing with people who have issues,
Well, you have people that want to jump on the UFO and abductee bandwagon, as you say, the Federation and this and that.
The Space Brothers are going to save us.
Exactly. But the fact is, those of us that are seriously into research, you have to dig. You're not going to take something at a word value. You want to dig and find out logically what this deal is.
Yeah. Well, for me, I was exceedingly skeptical when this whole thing sort of began rolling in my direction. And I told you before that I contacted these three young ladies that had been interviewed on the station, and I sat down and talked with these young ladies, and the first one said that she had been abducted when she was a little girl. She was on the way to a dance class, and that there was a really strange set of circumstances where a beam of light came down from this big Saturn-shaped UFO when she was living in Alabama, and that it had rendered the entire right side of the car where she was sitting transparent. All the adults in the cars at the intersection all fell asleep, and she was there wide awake, and these three little white figures came sort of floating across the field next to the car, mm-hmm. looked like Casper the Friendly Ghost, okay. and they said, there's been an accident. You need to go to the hospital. And they reached right in through the sheet metal of the car. While it was illuminated by this beam of light, the side of the car turned transparent like glass,
right.
but it was still material there,
uh-huh.
but they reached right in through the material substance of the car and pulled her right out of her seatbelt, right out of the, just right out through the side of the car.
So they shifted. They were able to go in between molecular matter.
Yeah, that's right. Like it was jello. Just came right out of the car, and she scared the daylights out of her.
Yeah, I imagine it did.
But she said the next thing she remembers, she wakes up, she's on this table, almost like stainless steel gurney, except that the metal was pliable and soft, almost like a fabric, but it was like a metal, like a conformal flowing metal, almost
right.
like some kind of a mercury alloy or something.
That's exactly what I had in my mind.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And so she said that they'd put her head in some kind of a saddle that braced it and positioned it in a particular way. There's a strap that went across her head holding her. There was a device that came up from below that held her lower jaw open, and she said this big gnarly looking machine rolls up to the table, this arm extends out from it, little device on the end rotates around, and it's got these two giant things look like syringes, two big syringes side by side.
I'm out of there.
Yeah, well, if she had been able to leave, she would have too. But she said that she's telling me all this because she said that she had these implants in her brain. And mm-hmm. I said, well, now how do you know? And she's recounting this story. And she said that this device, without any anesthesia or anything, just basically forced these two projectiles that looked like knitting needles with a little BB on the end of them,
mm-hmm.
right through the roof of her mouth, right into her brain case. And so the first thing I thought of, well, do you have any scars that, you know, would
substantiate? Yeah, evidence.
So she says, well, do you have a flashlight in your car? We go out and I shine a flashlight up, and it gave me the willies, I got to tell you, Bill, because she had these two deep, still red.
And this is how many years after this?
This is in 1989. This is about about 14 years after it happened.
Well, you would figure something like that would heal.
Well, that's a funny thing. I mean, they actually look like little tiny bullet wounds. And if you've ever seen someone who's been shot or had a bullet wound, that it leaves kind of a cratered appearance.
Exactly. It
and
does,
then, of course, in the mouth has a tendency to have a lot of vascularity, a lot of blood vessels and stuff. And so the site where these two points of penetration was still quite red. And but it had healed, of course.
14 years. Wow.
Yeah. But anyway, she said they showed up on the MRIs that she had done, and that these two little, they're about the size of a 22 caliber pellet,
okay.
Or BB,
yeah.
and sitting on either side of her pineal gland. I don't know why that particular gland comes up over and over again in these
abductions. Well, that's the main thing with abductions and everything. It seems like that's what they work with, is that particular gland. Also, in the paranormal activity, that is really focused on that particular gland.
So that was the first interview I did. The second one, she said that she had an implant that had been installed behind her ear, and you could see it was between the eardrum and the inner ear.
Well, that's a shiny one. You said you could see right behind the
eardrum. Yeah, with the otoscope. I didn't realize this, but the eardrum, because it's such a thin membrane.
Transparent.
Almost. If it's wet, or if you have like glycerin water in solution, you put it in there, it clears up the eardrum, so it is almost transparent, and you can see this thing look like a little tiny battery from an electric watch or something.
You know, not to change anything, but then when we were talking about that last time,
right.
I have one of those scopes at home.
Oh, do you?
So here's me and my family.
As soon as you get home.
Looking at everybody. You can see through that.
You can see the little bones behind the eardrum and everything. Yeah, it's one of the ways that they can tell whether you have an inner ear infection, because they can actually see the water or the fluid rolling around behind the eardrum if you have like a blocked eustachian tube or something, and so that's, you learn all kinds of stuff when you're into human physiology and everything.
I learned more doing this than I have in school, I tell you. But she had a deal in her ear.
She did. And the funny thing about that particular case was that over time, as I began discussing it more publicly and going on, she began to have a lot of encounters with the black helicopters and military people
case,
and stuff. Yeah. And there was an evening where she was basically forcibly taken from her home in the at nighttime by kind of a paramilitary operation. They basically kicked in the back door to her house. I saw the door a couple of days later. Had the typical, stereotypical chuck-a-book tread pattern on it, you know. And they said that they came into her room with what looked like a spray paint can, you know, in a khaki green, you know, label.
Know exactly where you're going. Yeah.
Hit her with an aerosol spray that knocked her out. Mm-hmm. She said she woke up on a gurney in a helicopter. I think it was a Black Hawk helicopter.
Okay.
And she said that the helicopter was flanked on both sides by these large black lens-shaped discs, you know, moving silently along with the helicopter. Mm-hmm. She was hit with a second aerosol spray when they realized she was awake and she was looking around. And the next time that she came awake, she was in a room with a black and white checkerboard tile pattern on the floor, no windows. She thought it was probably somewhere underground.
Okay. A lot of people, that's what in the Edmonton case, say that.
Yeah, she lives just south of Mount Wilson in Sierra Madre, which is just a little bit east of Pasadena in Southern California. And she said that this looked like they were out somewhere over the Mojave Desert.
When, that makes sense. There's a lot of bases out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite a few.
So
tunnel system.
But there were some interesting things that she said, and that was that she discovered on this particular occasion that this particular species of grays that she had encountered on many occasions, the one with the large heads and large black eyes.
Right. The taller ones or shorter ones?
Well, these were, I don't know, somewhere in the, like, 3.5 to 4 feet tall.
Okay, those are the smaller ones because you have the 5 to 6 foot range.
Kind of like the little worker bees of that particular species or
the
whatever.
Genetic modified, yeah.
But she said that she discovered that the power that they seem to be able to manifest over human beings is only effective if you look them in the eyes.
We've been there.
We were
talking
that's
about
right.
that.
Yeah. Yeah. You never look them in the eyes, because if you look them
look
in
at
the
their
eyes,
chest.
You're somewhere else.
Yeah. And that's every single case that I've dealt with my investigation. We're talking, you know, I'm 57 now. I've been doing this for 30 years, really, mm-hmm. you know, investigating. Yeah. And every single case states that as soon as they look them in the eyes, boom, that's
lights
it.
Out.
That's
yeah.
it.
You wake up the next morning in your bed and you go, what happened?
Yeah. Well, I only got part of that dream.
Yeah, yeah.
But go ahead.
It's strange. So, but anyway, so she was so angry about the fact that she had been forcibly taken from her house. She was so angry about this that she decided on this occasion that she was going to do something different. She was not going to look him in the eye. She just basically tucked her chin into her chest and looked at the floor. She wouldn't look at it. And she said almost immediately when they realized that she was willfully not engaging them, they all went into a panic. And she says, here are all these little
they lost their control.
Oh, yeah. These little gray guys are running around, bumping into each other like little robots, you know, turned loose on a desktop or something, and bumping into each other in the walls in a panic. And she said it wasn't too long before another type of being, very tall, 7-8 foot tall, black, obsidian black skin, almost like an insect, came into the room.
I've heard of this description. Yeah.
And this particular individual had a much more powerful mental or telepathic
ability.
Connection with her, and he basically said, you're going to look up and you're going to look in my eyes and you're going to do it now. And she said, the next thing I know, I'm in my bed in the morning.
That's a general float in at that point, you know, somebody with higher powers, and that makes sense.
Well, they beat the daylights out of her. I mean, she had a bruise on her neck that looked like a handprint.
Well, wasn't the movie Fire in the Sky? Okay, now he talked about that.
Travis Walton,
exactly. And how he was, you know, there was no nice thing about this. They drug him down through the area. Extremely powerful these beings are, too, physically as well as mentally.
Yeah.
Over time he was able to get up, but he recalls very similar things.
Well, see, what they lack in stature, they seem to have in strength.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's almost as though they're made of a much denser, much more rigid, maybe nanotechnology, I don't know. We've talked about the fact that there may be some kind of biomechanical aspect to these things, that they may actually be partly machines, like androids or something. But
it's hard to say.
It really is. I mean, you know, who knows? But what's interesting about that same case is that this young lady, this is in 1989, this is like 21 years ago or something, maybe longer, she was the one that first told me that they wore the full eye covering, the black covering that you peel back. It's like
I heard that about
It was in the early 1990s, like 93, 94, with the Ray Santilli film of the Alien Autopsy. Remember
yeah,
that?
Yeah, that's the first one.
Okay. Well, that was the first one that really made it out in the public. But this particular young lady, her name was Leisha Davison. She was describing this almost 5 years before that was
exactly.
ever
Exactly. I was putting those timelines together.
Yeah. So that just simply told me that if there was any truth to that, she was on top of it long before this film that Ray Santilli was promoting that, you know, was allegedly a, you know, released, you know, film that somehow made its way out of the Roswell Army Airfield.
One of the areas, Well, anyway, we got about a minute before commercial here. You know, I've turned around and I've investigated Dugway Proving Grounds, you know, the S-4 area, you know, Area 51, Dulce. I've been all over the United States looking at these places. I mean, when you get into this research and you start putting these pieces together, you see that there is something there. I mean, it might not have the whole picture of what's going on, but it is there. And, you know, we have Mark McCandlish with us, and he's explaining a lot of things here that are the witnesses, you know, righteous witnesses have described. And I think the most important part was they described something you already knew about and you had never met. You know, that's important. And with that said, this is William White Crowe. We're going straight to commercial right now. We'll be right back.
Recently, my wife had her annual exam at MD Imaging, and she had said that she went and got a call back later that day. One of the technologists at MD Imaging said that they might have detected something. Through the course of the conversation, they told her that they were just double-checking things. She said she actually felt better than going the first time because the staff member reassured her that it's just precautionary measures. Upon the re-exam, nothing was detected. So it was a great sigh of relief for both my wife and I, and I'd like to personally thank MD Imaging and their staff for just taking the worries out of the whole process and just eliminating one big worry from our lives and putting smiles back on our faces.
Celebrating 60 years of service, MD Imaging brings together technology and compassion to gain life-saving knowledge about your health. MD Imaging. Trust.
You can save your business money by paying less for postage. I'm Jennifer Haynes, Marketing Director with NorCal Presort, your business mailroom. Outsource your mailings to the experts at NorCal Presort to save time and save money. Think about it. Is that postage equipment sitting in your office making you money? The answer is no. Realistically, you pay a lease, you pay maintenance and ink, you pay labor, you pay full price for the postage, all in advance. How is that saving you money? Get rid of the postage machines and bring your mail to NorCal Presort. NorCal Presort takes the frustration and hassle out of your business mailings. Mailing costs are an increasing monthly expense, but we know how to save you time and money in first class and with your direct mail. Come and see us at 835 Industrial Street, just off Hilltop, or call 221-6895. Save time and money today at NorCal Presort, your business mailroom. Call us. 221-6895.
Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look?
Okay, we're back. This is Wayne White Crowe. We're with Mark McCandlish, and Nate had brought up something here during the commercial break in the Gulf of Aden. And let's touch base on that a little bit. What do you know about that, Mark?
Well, I'll tell you what I've seen, what I've heard, and it's just that there was an allegation being made that there was some kind of a highly unusual phenomenon that was occurring out there. I don't recall whether it was some kind of a vortex in the water or above the water, or whether it was...
Also happened in the Bermuda area.
But is that right? It's at the same time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that. Well, you know, it seems to me that we know from the maps that pilots use that there are a number of magnetic anomalies around the planet that will often throw off their guidance systems if they're relying specifically on, you know, magnetic
South
compass.
Atlantic has a big one also,
That's right. And so, you know, it may just be that, that these are things that are caused by unusually large deposits of magnetite or iron in the crust of the Earth in those locations. It's really hard to say. You know, if you've got, you know, like the Mid-Atlantic Ridge, you know, where you have the floor of the ocean separating.
A lot of magnetics.
A lot of magma coming up to the surface and causing the expansion of the tectonic plates and stuff. You can see where...
Which is on the increase globally.
That's right. That's right. In fact, that may, in fact, be one of the underlying causes of the things that are going on around the Pacific Rim right now, the Ring of Fire, so to speak, the earthquake in Japan, although there's been a lot of talk about HAARP, you know, playing a role in some of this stuff.
Quite a bit. As a matter of fact, I've got quite a few emails and on Facebook and everything. A lot of people ask me also about the new comet coming in. There's a lot of things, you know, blaming it on this and that. But, you know, we don't know. You know, so we have to look at the geological factors of this. But back to the Gulf of Aden.
Well, that's really about as much as I know, is that there was some unusual phenomenon, that there was...
So some people are talking about, like, wormhole technology or a Stargate, you know, and it's kind of funny because when I did the conference down with Brian Hall and the Conspiracy Con down there, we brought up, and I literally brought pictures in of a Stargate that they had dug up way early in the 1920s, okay? And it just so happens that it matches the Stargate that they're using.
From the TV show?
On the TV show right now. So you have to wonder about this Hollywood government, you know, in the real finds, archaeological. Yeah.
Well, you know, the technical review, the technical remote viewing program that Hal put off and Russell Targ and some of those other theoretical scientists were experimenting with at the Stanford Research Institute down in San Francisco, the military did call that program Stargate.
Yes.
It was a Stargate program, but I think that even though there may be some parallel in terms of the names they were using, the fact that there might be some kind of a wormhole technology, and it's not...
You have to wonder with the Norway lights.
Well, that's true. That phenomenon was so bizarre, and you know, I saw the video of that, and
fantastic, unbelievable.
Well, the idea that a Russian missile that was stopped they said that it had a problem with the guidance system, and that as the rocket took off, it began losing control, and it was flying sort of in a spiral, or it was making this strange spiral, except that when you look at the video, you see the whole spiral as a unit rotating.
The whole thing.
It wasn't just some
type of power shield
or something. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, there was obviously something going on there. Now, you know, I've actually seen, even in our area here, I've seen high-yield energetic events occurring in the sky that look like explosions, a brilliant flash of light that's, I mean, just
momentary.
like a tenth of a second.
Yeah.
1 minute's there, 1 minute's gone. There's no residual afterglow. It doesn't
Nothing
fade
at
away.
All.
It's
I've seen
it's
that.
Like boom, boom, it's on, it's off that quickly. And then you see this little object sort of materialize in the middle of it, and they go, pew, and it shoots off like a bullet.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that there had to be something going on there. Now, what that was... You know, whether it was, you know...
Popping in and out of existence.
A craft coming in from another dimension, or a craft coming in from a hyperspace journey from another star system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had an event that I witnessed back in 1993, I think it was. I was on my way back from Angels Stadium. I went to see an Angels baseball game with some friends.
That'd be fun.
It was. We were on State Route 91 coming through Carbon Canyon, which is known for having quite a few UFO sightings.
Yeah, and that area is hot.
It's, let's see, that would be east of Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
On an east-west running route. And there was a large urban area, houses and things, off to the left on the north side of this State Route 91. And a slight ridge beyond that, and you could see the, you know, the heavy 40,000 watt power lines going up and over the hill. And there was a Santa Ana wind condition that night, and the planes were circulating around the airport and coming in from the west instead of from the east because of the direction of the wind.
Those are very powerful winds, as Santa Ana is.
Yeah. So, you know, I was speculating. I was talking to the other kids in the car at the time, and I was saying, you know, it must be really difficult for those pilots, you know, to be in a holding pattern while they're waiting to sort of rearrange their flight plans.
Yeah.
You know, the air traffic controllers must have a real challenge to keep these planes from...
Colliding
with one another. And no sooner had I said that than there's this brilliant flash above the airport. And this ball of light comes out of the flash, and it begins descending at about a 45-degree angle. It gets brighter and brighter as it does. And then out of the same spot where the flash had occurred came all of these parallel golden lines, and they looked like dots and dashes that were all moving in unison together, and they were all the same length, but they were different line weights, you know, like a thick line and a thin line, but they were all the same length. And it took me a day or two to figure out what I'd actually seen there, because I thought at first it was a plane that had crashed and, you know, debris was falling
and flaming, except
that if something's flaming, it flutters, you know, you had the flames.
Well, you have a vapor trail.
Yes, that's right. And there wasn't any of that. It was just, but these lines were moving in unison with the glowing object, and they were, you know, staggered and spaced at different distances, different line weights. And I suddenly realized that what I was looking at was a craft that had come out of hyperspace, and that I was essentially looking back through the wormhole, and those golden lines was the red shifting of the white starlight, because the vehicle itself is flying away from the stars in the field where it came from, you know, light years away.
We're getting into a little quantum theory here.
It is. It's true.
Mark and I have a tendency to fall in that real easy, so we're not trying to confuse anybody out there.
But you know, if you're traveling towards a light source, it shifts towards the blue.
Yes.
I mean, it's a frequency change. And if you're flying away from a light source, it tends to Doppler effect in light. And so it tends to become more of a golden color and then yellow and then red, like that. And so here were
that
these...
That depends on its speed.
That's right. And so, in fact, this is one of the original concepts that they used in trying to figure out that the universe was expanding, because many of the stars around us, we look out there, they were redshifted, which suggested that the light itself was... You know, the source of light was moving away from us.
The
universe was expanding.
Well, I heard some new theories on that too. They're coming up with some new stuff on that Doppler effect thing. But you know, as time goes on, we'll learn more.
Well, my personal belief, I think that the redshift and the expanding universe and the whole Big Bang thing, I think that
I think it's wrong.
Wrong, and the reason I say that is because if you go outside on a clear day and you look in the distance, you'll notice that things that are way off in the distance have kind of a bluish tinge to them, because it's called atmospheric perspective in artwork. But it's caused by the fact that the light that's coming from those distant hills has to travel through so much space, much air, so it tends to change the color of the light and everything like that. But if
kind of a prism effect.
Yes. Yeah. But if you look at the tremendous distances that light from other galaxies has to come to Earth, and you think about all of the dust clouds and the gravitational fields of other stars that light has to pass through.
The jelly clouds, all kinds of stuff, yeah.
Well, you have to remember that any time light it hits a surface, it's absorbed and then re-emitted, and that's what you're actually seeing is the light is being re-emitted from these different surfaces.
Exactly.
Okay. But each time that happens, there's an energetic, there's a little minus sign next to it that says, okay, we're taking away some of the energy.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine that you've got light coming from a galaxy that's 13 billion light years away.
Mm-hmm.
Think of all the encounters that...
Oh, it's going to change dramatically over time.
And the reason is, and this is the clue, is that light never changes its speed. It's what they call Lorentz invariant.
Very true.
It always goes 186,000 miles per second, right? But if it has all of these other exchange processes, energetic, you know, goes through a gravitational field, it has to give up something. And so what it gives up is it gives up frequency.
Yeah.
So it shifts the light into red, but it doesn't mean that galaxy is actually moving away from you.
That's
it starts to shoot holes in the whole idea of this Big Bang, where the whole universe is compressed down to the size of a basketball. I mean, I've never heard anything so ridiculous in my life.
You know, when we go into quantum theory, we talk membrane theory. You know how they touch and they have another big bang and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I really question that. And this is what you just brought up here. I really question the fact that all this mass is in this one little ball, and then it blows up and boom and creates everything.
I know, it seems pretty ridiculous when you think about it.
I don't think that that's the case.
I think that, if you look at it from a spiritual standpoint, and you said that, you know, God always is, always has been, always will be.
The universe.
If God is unified, God had to exist somewhere, and if you know, if God is truly
what is the beginning of
infinite,
all things?
You know, I think the whole universe is infinite. I think the universe has always existed, always will exist. You know,
I agree with you there.
And so I think the idea of a Big Bang really played into the idea of a creation event.
Well,
you know,
I think it's a new discoverer or something like that. They have a picture on the new. I got it yesterday, and they have a picture on there talking about the Big Bang theory having a lot of holes in it. You
it
know?
Does,
and so
does.
We're going in a new direction right now. It's fascinating.
Yeah, it always is. And I have a lot of you know, devout Christian friends who, you know, will debate sometimes very passionately me about, you know, evolution and the Big Bang theory and this kind of stuff. And I always find it, you know, very intriguing and intellectually stimulating to have discussions like that, because no matter what the outcome is, you know, it's better that we think about it and we try to understand it, because if you understand what's going on, then you really know a little more about your place in the universe.
Well, and see, that's the key right now, what's going on with this world and the religions and the governments and everything. Things don't fit anymore like they used to. It's so out of balance.
Yeah,
and people are going back to the fact of, who am I? Where do I come from? You know, the religious factors are falling apart on the planet right now because people want to know truth. And that's where science came from.
Yeah.
Science originated because religion said it's this way and this way and this way. And other people said, no, we want to know what is making everything tick. So they started looking, and that started creating a division between sciences and religion where it really should be.
Well, a lot of people don't know or remember that Galileo was prosecuted very heavily by the Catholic Church for the idea that Jupiter and the other planets orbited around the sun and the center of the universe was not the Earth, as they had originally believed.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, I believe he was under house arrest for
quite a while.
Most of his life, after his discovery and the telescope and everything.
Anything that he put out, they looked at it very, very carefully.
That's right.
You know? That's like Leonardo da Vinci, you know, the rest of them, too.
He
didn't have it as bad as he did.
No. That's true. But, you know, he had a lot of very wealthy friends, as did Michelangelo.
Yeah.
But the thing that troubles me more than anything else about the world as it stands now is the idea that somehow the God that is worshipped by, you know, the Sunnis, the Sufis, the Christians, the Jews, whoever, you know, they always, it's a my God, not your God. My God's different than your God. I mean, I've never heard anything so ridiculous.
Biggest mistake anybody can do is say the word my.
Yeah.
Because being a shaman and everything and you know, I've seen people come into this world and seen people leave this world.
That's
and it's kind of funny when you're in a battle situation. Nate can relate to this, and Chandler, the other producer, and myself and you. Everybody on each side is praying, okay, God, help me kill this sucker over here, you know?
It's ridiculous.
You know, and you have to ask the question, is he really listening to both sides
or
what's going on?
Is Allah any different than Yahweh?
Exactly.
Is Yahweh any different than God?
But you look back in the ancient text, in the ancient Sanskrit, you know, and the Anunnaki, you know, ancient Sumerian, and they do talk about these gods, but they talk about them bringing us here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and creating us genetically if you get into the aspect.
Yeah.
And we're not stepping on anybody's belief system here, but let's look at the whole picture of possibilities.
Well, it's a historical text. I mean, the idea that we were somehow a species that existed on the planet that was genetically modified by someone who came here.
Terraformed
us and wanted us to mine gold for them because they were putting it into their atmosphere to protect their planet.
And what are we doing now?
Chemtrails.
Yeah.
So it all comes kind of full circle when you think about it.
And, you know, we brought that up one time. I was talking to Michael Murphy and Dane Wigginton, excuse me. And then and I brought this up in just a conversation one time. It's really funny because we seem to be doing right now exactly the same thing that these Anunnaki, that the ancient Sumerians talked about, getting the gold and the resources here to protect their planet. We're doing the same thing, spraying things in our atmosphere right now. Question is, why? What's up? What's going on?
Well, here's my opinion, and I'm no expert on this because I've talked to a lot of people, but I've also had the opportunity to observe what's going on here because Reading is one of those areas where we see a lot of it.
Oh, yeah.
And I've noticed more than one occasion that we'll see you know, a meteorological report or a, you know, forecast saying it's going to be 85 degrees today, and then the planes come in, they spray these trails across the sky, and it's about 15 degrees cooler than what they predicted. And so I start to wonder if, you know, maybe the real culprit in the global warming, climate change thing is the sun, things that are going on with the sun.
That's what I believe.
You know?
That's really
and
what
that,
I believe.
And that somebody somewhere has decided, you know, probably, what's the word,
we like to use elite around here, you know.
Well, I was thinking more in terms of their choice to do this sort of on their own without any consultation with anybody else.
Gotcha.
Sort of,
no global government.
No, they just basically decide we're going to do this and we're going to do it worldwide. And there's only a couple places where they're not doing it. I think North Korea is one of them.
Mainly from what on my research and everything, and Nate here too, is that they're the only places they're not doing this is non-UN countries.
Oh, is that right?
That's what it seems. Seems like they're in every UN country. As a matter of fact, wasn't it China, Nate, and a couple other countries that grounded a couple planes were spraying?
It was Nigeria.
It was Nigeria.
Right. So forced them down, and they were and all their assets in the United States were frozen overnight by the U.S.
Right,
government.
Because they found the equipment, the spraying equipment, in the aircraft.
That's right.
Now, for those of you that don't believe in chemtrails out there, here we got Nigeria and a couple other countries grounded these planes, went in, took the assets, found out, took pictures of all the spraying equipment, and
you can find the pictures on the internet.
Yeah,
too.
You can. So. So is this happening? Yes, it is happening. The question is, what are you going to do about it? And the other question is, why is it here? Why are they doing it? Yeah. And I agree with you, Mark. I've been studying the sun. Did you look at it last night? Did you pull it up on SOHO? Well, we got some serious activity happening.
Is that right?
Major activity.
I didn't know that.
As a matter of fact, I got a picture that I keep on my screensaver right now because it's massive. But I'm going to go back to the UFO thing here. Now, the SOHO pictures that I've seen, SOHO anomalies, and everything around the sun. I've seen some that look, I mean, these are craft. They got to be craft.
Well, you know, I looked at that too, and I was leaning towards agreeing with you, but then I went back and I pulled up the imagery that they had, like every 10 or 15 seconds.
Right.
And these objects were moving from one corner of the screen to the other. I mean, literally, these objects, some of them were like the size of the planet Mercury or something.
Yeah, I agree.
And they were moving at such tremendous velocities, if the jump from one spot to the other was an accurate representation, that they would have had to been using technology that's just so far beyond anything we can think of.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And so I begin to wonder whether...
But we're thinking human terms here.
Well, so I didn't just listen to the UFO community and to the conspiracy theory people.
Yeah.
I actually went and talked to some scientists about this, and I said, are there gamma rays or something that could be coming out of the sun that are striking...
Lens diffractions,
not so much that the sensor that they use is like the CCD plate that they have in a lot of digital cameras now.
Oh, okay.
And it has a different kind of sensitivity. It looks at different frequencies of sunlight.
This is what you're talking about, like the autofocus type?
No. It's the actual sensor that picks up the imagery.
Okay.
It goes through lenses and things like that. But when you get these highly energetic particles that come in and they make contact with that CCD, it's a closed couple discharge plate.
Right.
Very high resolution. But when these energetic particles make it through the optics of the camera system and they hit that plate, they basically overcharge that particular point on the plate. And it's like a residual charge that stays there so long that it leaves this anomaly that looks like a little flying saucer.
Okay.
You know?
All right.
And
I'll have to look into that.
You know, I tried to be very skeptical about it because I just, you know, these things.
Well, me too, but there's some of them. The one I showed you is very blurred, very small. We really couldn't see much.
Yeah.
But some of these things, I mean, it's like, it really seems that something.
Well,
you know,
I mean,
some
of them look like a lens shaped UFO, others look like a sphere. A perfectly formed sphere, but when you think about, you know, the dynamics of a highly energetic particle hitting a CCD plate.
That's what we got,
you know,
Mark.
Well, I'm not trying to get real technical, but it's just imagine that you've got, a soldering iron and you melt some solder and it drops on a piece of wax paper. It's going to hit the paper and it's going to melt a perfectly little circle where that little globule of solder hits. And that's kind of what's, in terms of the energetics, that's kind of what's happening on the CCD plate. It leaves a spherical shaped anomaly on the screen where the receptor is stunned momentarily until it neutralizes the charge and it goes back to its normal.
So when we're talking about this, have you seen any pictures that you believe are clandestine pictures of UFOs?
Clandestine?
I mean, you know, U.S. government reverse engineered and regular, real extraterrestrial craft.
Side by side?
Not side by side.
Oh, just as a list of things?
You believe are UFOs pictures.
Well, there were some pictures that were taken by a pilot, Harvey Williams, in 1966 or 67 near Provo, Utah.
Yeah.
Just a little bit east of where Area 51 is. And these are probably the clearest images of what might be termed as the alien reproduction vehicle that was later seen by two different witnesses that I actually know, personally know. One was a fellow I went to college with, another was a guy that eventually wound up working at Lockheed Skunk Works. But the interesting thing about this was that the person who actually had a chance to be part of a presentation who had this vehicle explained and a lot of the details about what it could do, one of its capabilities was that it was able to go light speed or faster, which, you know, sounds like
I've always believed we can't go faster than light.
It's all a matter of understanding the science.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about rocket propulsion. It's so archaic.
At the quantum level, you can travel faster than light easily.
That's right. You demass something and you don't have to worry about all those equations that Einstein came up with.
Yep.
You know? And it's learning how to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's basically what the extraterrestrials have done.
Yeah.
And that's what we've been doing it for 40 years, and it's just now starting to come to the surface because people are so disappointed that this technology isn't making its way out into...
Oh, there's a lot of technology.
Well, I mean, you know, because if they brought this energy and this technology out, we would not be worrying about things like the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant meltdown. And
we wouldn't even be worried about oil consumption or anything at this point.
That's right. It could be used for other things like plastic and pharmaceuticals, The idea that these craft exist, they've been photographed. Oftentimes, people see these things and they just assume, you know, they're from another planet, another star system. But a lot of times, I would say in about 85% of the cases, when people
that much?
See them,
okay.
No, well, maybe, hear me out. I am Mark.
Okay.
Yes, of course. But I would say in about 85% of the cases, eyewitness accounts, people are seeing classified weapon systems.
That's what I believe in most cases.
And maybe 10 to 15% might be from off-world.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say the vast majority are just highly advanced propulsion systems that we have, that we've deployed and are being used more and more often now.
Mm-hmm. And that some of these systems are reverse engineered, obviously.
Well, that certainly seems to be a part of it. I mean, if a guy from Lockheed will admit on tape as part of the disclosure project that they were actively going around and talking to alien abductees or people who claim this to be the case, trying to find out any little tidbits they could about what the technology looked like, same as I was doing.
Then that's obviously they're on the right path.
Yeah, they are acknowledging essentially that there are species of entities coming from other star systems that are visiting this planet, and we want to know how they're doing it.
I was thinking dimensional travel also. You know, we're talking about the wormhole effect here. In some cases, where you can just go from one point to point A to point B in seconds, you know, instead of taking us 10 years to get there.
Right.
Simple by, you know, in a sense, folding a piece of paper in half, you know. Traveling, as Dune put it, traveling through space without traveling, in a sense, you know. So, but that's a very good show, by the way. I like that one. And it talks about a lot what we're doing with this time and dimensional stuff. Do you believe that there's a possibility that some of this is dimensional also?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the mathematicians, the physicists have said that they've modeled at least 11 parallel universes that coexist in this space-time with us, that are embedded in the space-time that we're not even aware of.
Imagine that. Sitting right here, right now, we have 11 different dimensions. Amazing.
You know, and the idea that this is possible, one of the ways that you can kind of, you know, point this out to people who, you know, just understand the most basic thing is when you stimulate something, when you charge a material, and then you get a glow, the light, the photons that come from that. Photons are basically just electrons that have orthorotated out of this dimension about 90 degrees. That's why they have no mass, because they are right in that sort of
sweet zone,
that nether world between the two dimensions. Uh-huh. And that's why they have no mass, is because they're actually electrons that are sort of between this dimension and the next one over.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's an indication right there.
That can tell us right there, you know, everybody talks about dimension, this, that. And we can touch base on, I know we're talking about UFOs and everything, but this is talking about something so futuristic. And we do use this now, I believe, in some cases.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking looking glass technology some mm-hmm. people, in some cases yeah. here. And for those of you that don't know what looking glass technology is, this is basically time travel in a sense, dimensional travel.
Well, that particular project,
more information on that.
That particular project was actually a device. It looked remarkably similar to the device that was in the movie Contact with Jodie Foster.
Right.
It was built on a mammoth scale, but this device was actually probably about 20 feet in diameter,
mm-hmm.
and when it was activated, the device itself would kind of disappear, and there would be this thing there that would appear look like a goldfish bowl of,
right.
of an energy field.
That's what I've heard.
But you could actually look into it, and you could dial in a particular time and place. You could look at the Kennedy assassination
wow.
as though you were floating above.
Nate, we need to get one of those.
But you know, I mean, this is something that they were able to do, and then they had two smaller units that were set at 90 degrees to that, so they uh-huh. could vector it in with an X and Y, axis.
Oh yeah, you want a grid coordinate.
Yes,
yeah.
that's right. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is the kind of thing that, you know, it's so far-fetched and so utterly fantastic that most people just say, oh, that can't possibly be true.
Well, usually when we start saying can't possibly be true is when we kick ourselves in the butt later on.
I think Einstein said something about that. You know, the person who says it's impossible will be subjected to the laughter of the gods someday down the road, you know, something like that.
Yeah, also, and I watch another show called Sons of Guns. And he says, just when we say we can build anything, is usually when it comes around and bites us in the butt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got 1 minute left, ladies and gentlemen, and we've been here with Mark McCandlish talking about UFOs and the extraterrestrials, abductions, quantum mechanics, a little bit of everything here. And we want to thank him very much for being on the show. And Mark,
my pleasure.
You know, we hope to have you back again, definitely.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to in the future here putting another show together like Coast to Coast. We'll come up with the name soon. We'll let Nate know, and we'll go from there. And with that said, I'd like to turn around and thank Advanced Soil Stabilization using Technosoil for dust control in roads, driveways, and parking lots, also installing Crestone driveways. Call Todd Sykes for more information at 530-549-4801. Advanced Soil is green-friendly and eliminates dust. And we're...
Of course, Team Quest 2. Hit them up.
Definitely. And this is William Whitecrow saying good night, and I'll see you next Sunday.
As strong as our steel. There is a war going on for your mind. If you are thinking, you are winning. Resistance is victory. Defeat is impossible. Your weapons are already in hand. Reach within you and find the means by which to gain your
Fox News Radio, I'm Karen Riegel. A lot of land is burning in West Texas. There are over a dozen wildfires burning in the Lone Star State. The angriest fire is probably near Fort Davis, where 61,000 acres are in flames. Some 40 homes have been destroyed.
So far, 61,000 plus acres, and that is expected to rise. Crews are conducting burnout operations. They're also actively using aircraft to try to suppress the fire. Helicopters, air tankers. It is 0% contained.
Alan Kraft with the Texas Forest Service. That fire just missed the Fort Davis Historic Site, and that's a U.S. Army cavalry fort built back in 1854. It's been a long day in Mapleton, Iowa, where residents have been cleaning up after yesterday's tornado, which destroyed 100 homes in a small town of 1,200.
People have done a lot of cleaning up and clearing, and so I think it says a lot for the spirit and the willingness.